Today on the Learner Podcast, I'm pleased to welcome Whitney Stewart, a science author, and Hans Andersen, a clinical geneticist, who together wrote Genomics. Since the completion of the Human Genome Project, the field of genetic studies has transitioned into an era of discovery. Whitney and Hans explore the scientific breakthroughs in genetic research that currently inform our understanding of ancestry, inheritance, epigenetics, health, and medicine. Through fascinating case studies, the authors explain how DNA mutations pass from parents to children and how genetic disorders affect real people's well-being. The authors' case-based approach makes this topic accessible to readers and encourages student interest in the burgeoning fields of genomics research and healthcare. These topics have real-world interest to readers today. For example, Whitney, do our genetics increase our susceptibility to COVID-19?
Yes, this question about whether or not certain genes make us more susceptible to COVID-19 is a really good question, especially now when we all want to know what is going to make us more susceptible or less susceptible to COVID-19 and what might help us not have a severe case. It's just too early to say right now. However, I do know that there's one genetic study in the Journal of Gerontology that says having two copies of the APOE4 gene, which is often associated with Alzheimer's disease, that might increase the risk of severe COVID-19 infection. I know that other scientists are looking at the human leukocyte antigen gene, the HLA gene family, that may affect susceptibility to COVID-19 and the severity of the disease. But I think right now, there are also studies that show that perhaps having O blood type might make you less susceptible to the disease. But again, these are all preliminary studies, and time will tell, and further studies will tell whether or not these early results are accurate. I think the best thing to do right now, as we all know, is take precautionary measures and wear masks, wash hands, social distance, that kind of thing.
A vital piece of information that came from the Human Genome Project is that genes are only a small part of the genome, between 1 and 2%. One goal of future genetic research is to understand more about the remaining 98 to 99% of the genome that does not code for protein, which scientists call non-coding DNA. Hans, what does non-coding DNA do if it cannot code?
Very little is known about the 98% of DNA which is non-coding DNA. There may be transcription factors or other regulatory elements that help control the expression of those coding regions in the 2% of genes that we do know about. But there's a great deal that we don't know about the non-coding part of DNA.
Several of the case studies in the book share how patients have had to make various lifestyle changes to cope with their genetic diagnoses. Can diet have an effect on our genetics? And if so, what would be the ideal diet to prevent genetic disorders?
There's a strong interplay between diet and gene expression. But there's not one perfect diet for all people. Some people might have a particular genetic background that make one diet more appropriate for them and another appropriate for a different person. But also, if for instance you don't eat a food like milk sugar, which is in milk, also called lactose, then your intestines don't produce much lactase, the enzyme that breaks down that particular product, lactose. That's called downregulation of a gene when that gene isn't functionally required at a particular time.
Can your own body correct your own genetic disorders?
Unlike what Gregor Mendel believed, DNA is not stable from generation to generation, and even within an individual cell, DNA can be mutated or change in its sequence. In a cell, when a mutation occurs, for instance, cancer might develop. But there are also DNA repair mechanisms within each cell which can allow for correction of DNA sequence abnormalities.
Because the human body can't fix its own genes to prevent or eradicate genetic disorders, and to address some of the challenges of gene therapy, geneticists have created a tool called CRISPR-Cas9 that can edit the human genome directly. Whitney, do you have any concerns about the use of CRISPR in the United States?
This is an important question. CRISPR-Cas9 is currently being studied for the treatment of inherited diseases as such diseases as cystic fibrosis or sickle cell disease and hemophilia. But this technique of CRISPR-Cas9 is not a simple technique. And using it can have unintended or off-target effects that researchers must understand before they can bring this technology to healthcare. So also some genes that can cause one clinical disorder, they also play a role in other illnesses. So doctors don't want to edit pieces of the DNA that help cure a specific disease, only to discover that they have caused, you know, another type of health problem. That's one reason, and we say this in the book too, that's one reason why doctors have to be careful about using CRISPR-Cas9 only on somatic non-sex cells in humans. Because if they were to edit the DNA in the germline cells, the human sex cells, or in human embryos that were later implanted in a person's womb, these genetic changes that were made for this technology could be passed down to a patient's children, possibly affecting the children's health. Doctors have to be very careful that what they are doing is closely targeted to working on the illness that a patient has and not having unintended consequences of this technology.
As we learn more about what can be affected by gene editing or gene therapy, it naturally raises the question of what genetics can control. Hans, to what extent do genetics have an example on, for example, human mental illness?
Lots of genetic factors are related to mental illness. We know this because of familial inheritance of behavior disorders. But it's also difficult to separate out the environmental factors within a family. One interesting experiment are twins who are raised apart. They can have a higher similarity or concordance of their mental health issues, supporting the idea that there are genetic factors which can control behavior and mental illness.
How are genes named?
There's not a universal gene naming convention per se. Often the discoverer of the gene gets to name the gene, but they frequently will use something related to the function of the gene in its name to try to identify it. But there are even unusual gene names like Sonic Hedgehog, which have a sort of humorous bent to them.
Most people have probably heard of direct-to-consumer genetic testing recently. Whitney, this is something you've been researching for several years. What should people keep in mind as they consider whether to do direct-to-consumer genetic testing?
Direct-to-consumer genetic testing is an important topic when we're talking about genomics in the 21st century. We all have heard of companies like 23andMe and Ancestry. Perhaps we've heard of Color Genomics and others that are going to report on either on our ancestry or on our healthcare or on both. It's important before you begin to take a genetic direct-to-consumer genetic test, it's important to know the risks involved, the risks of receiving medical information if you don't have, if you're not educated in healthcare, if you don't have access to a physician with whom you can discuss your results. I would think carefully about taking these tests, either for ancestral information, for healthcare, and ask yourself, why are you taking this? And are you prepared to receive the answer? I know of people, for example, who have discovered that their father was not their father. They're not their biological father. Now, if you're not prepared to find out this information, and if you don't have a support system behind you, that could be overwhelming information to receive. And the same is true for receiving information about healthcare. If, for example, your test results show that you might have an increased risk for a certain disease because you have two copies of a certain genetic mutation that's associated with that disease, you might freak out if you don't have a healthcare professional with whom to discuss this, because you may not know exactly what that means for your healthcare. Does that mean right now that you have a high risk for developing a disease, or is that not true? You know, it's important to ask these questions of yourself before you go in and take a direct-to-consumer genetic test. Also, you have to know that more and more often now, police are using genetic testing company results to find, to access that information in order to create a profile and find criminals. And so do you want your information to be in a database that is accessed by law enforcement? That's, I guess, another question to ask yourself before you take a direct-to-consumer genetic test.
Hans, how has computer science changed the field of genetics?
Computer technology is essential to modern genetic analysis. It's essentially impossible for a human to accurately analyze tens of thousands of base pairs. Computers can do this in seconds. We would not be able to do most of the genetic analysis and personalized medicine without computers. Currently, sequence analysis can be done as easily for 100 genes as for one because we have computers available to do the analysis.
How does someone become a geneticist?
There are basic science geneticists and there are clinical geneticists. The basic science geneticists work in laboratories only and typically get a PhD in genetics. Then they can work in a university or a biotech company. Clinical geneticists are medical doctors. They go to medical school and do a residency in pediatrics or obstetrics and gynecology or some other primary care specialty. And then they spend 2 to 3 years in a medical genetic residency. These doctors work in hospitals or clinics and sometimes at medical schools. You can learn a lot more about careers in medical genetics at the abmgg.org. That's the American Board of Medical Genetics and Genomics.
Thank you both for joining me and sharing your perspectives on genetics and genomics.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks from both of us for this interview. Genomics in the 21st century is a very important topic, and the genetic revolution has enormous implications for both healthcare and survival of the human race. I hope many people will go into the field of genetics because we need geneticists now more than ever. Thank you.
Genomics, A Revolution in Health and Disease Discovery is available now from Lerner Publishing Group. Please visit learnerbooks.blog for an educator's guide and more information about the book. Thank you for listening to the Lerner Podcast. Tune in again next time for more author interviews and the stories behind the books.